This is the Future of HR podcast, episode 140.
The most fundamental principle of coaching and the power of coaching that developed through ages from the Greeks. Socrates was sitting under the tree and teaching the students. It was all in dialogues and conversations, is personalization. So the number one priority is personalization. So this is where coaching was used in companies primarily for the top executives in HR were called in to bring a coach to coach this particular senior executive, et cetera, et cetera. This is how in companies these interventions were initially introduced. Again, very expensive. Individual coaches were brought in on retainers for about 6 months or so. It was only available for the most senior executives. However, the methodology of coaching is very powerful because it personalizes the approach, it works on behaviors, it really connects the tutor and the executive who is undergoing this. And so the idea of making this available to much greater numbers of people was very appealing. Imagine the world, and we're stepping into that world right now, where this type of personalized approach to development will be available to all. That's the second pillar of modern coaching, will be from personalization, which is absolutely powerful, to democratization.
How will digital coaching impact the future of work? How can HR leaders leverage digital coaching to accelerate development? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career to the next level. Since launching the Future of HR podcast in late 2022, I've been fortunate to have meaningful conversations with over 100 HR thought leaders and world-class CHROs from around the globe. These conversations have revealed powerful insights about what makes HR functions and HR leaders truly effective, strategic, and impactful. And what's been especially rewarding since going all in on my mission to develop the next generation of HR leaders about a year ago is having the privilege and opportunity to be a keynote speaker at 14 internal HR conferences for Fortune 500 companies like Kohler, AbbVie, Corning, LabCorp, and more. My most requested topics? Future-proofing HR and the influence equation, both designed to transform your HR team from strategic business partners to true value creators. And these aren't just presentations. They're interactive sessions that equip your HR leaders with practical frameworks to challenge conventional thinking and move beyond the traditional HR playbook. If you're planning your next HR conference, career week, or leadership gathering, and want to provide your team with strategic insights that drive immediate impact, I'd love to connect and explore how I might help make your event a big success. Feel free to reach out to me at jp@futureofhr.com to start the conversation. And with that, I'm excited to introduce this week's guest, Dr. Anna Tavis. Anna is a true pioneer in the intersection of human resources and technology. She's the clinical professor and chair of the Human Capital Management Department at NYU's School of Professional Studies, where she's shaping the next generation of HR leaders. And what makes Anna's perspective so valuable is her remarkable journey from both the corporate and academic worlds. She's held global leadership positions at impressive organizations like Motorola, Nokia, United Technologies, before bringing the real-world expertise back to academia. And you might recognize Anna from her groundbreaking Harvard Business Review article, HR Goes Agile, and the Performance Management Revolution. Both have been selected for HBR's Must Reads collection. Anna's influence in our field was recognized when she was named to the Thinkers 50 Radar in 2020 and listed among the top 100 global influencers in people analytics over the past 2 years. Anna's latest book, The Digital Coaching Revolution, explores how technology is democratizing coaching across organizations, and we're going to dive into that today. If you enjoyed this conversation with Anna and you are really focused on where digital coaching is going and want to be on the cutting edge, then you need to attend New York University's Coaching and Technology Summit happening July 7th and 8th this summer. Anna has been hosting and bringing the best minds in technology, academics, and world-class CHROs together for the last 4 years, and this is an event you will not want to miss. So I highly encourage you to check this out. Go to NYU's website and you'll find more information about the NYU Coaching and Technology Summit happening this July 7th and 8th. And now let's jump into my conversation with Anna. Anna, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
I am great. Thanks so much for inviting me. I'm so excited.
I'm excited to have you on the podcast, especially this topic we're going to talk a lot about today around digital coaching and AI and really this upcoming digital coaching revolution. There's really no one better to have on the podcast than you for that topic, so I'm excited. But first, I want to make sure we get to know you a little bit. And what's interesting, Anna, about your background is even though you're an academic now at NYU, you spent the first half of your career actually as a talent and organization development practitioner working at large multinational corporations. And so I wonder, how has that practitioner background really shaped your view of HR, HR education, academia, research, et cetera?
Oh, thanks so much for bringing this up, because I actually was an academic before. I started my working career, finishing my PhD and getting into teaching, et cetera. And I kind of had the aha moment saying, I can't be doing it all of my life. I can't be teaching something that I've never done before. And so I transitioned out. And that's how I ended up working for about 15 years in senior executive roles in talent management, organizational effectiveness, always on the talent side. I never really had much interest in becoming a CHRO or the top HR person, more focused on people development experience of employees, both in Europe and here in the US, in two industries, which I think is important for what I'm doing now. In technology, I worked for Motorola and Nokia in Helsinki and for Motorola in London. And then I moved back to the US and worked on Wall Street, which was also a very interesting experience. Just to sum it all up, where kind of the next level of awareness kicked in was when the head of global talent for AIG at the time of the financial crisis, and having experienced that real shock to the global financial system and being on the inside of the company that was kind of responsible for it and having stepped into my role as a head of talent, I actually had to be working on figuring out how to divest big chunks of businesses, what it meant for employees, et cetera, et cetera. I had a full range of experience in end of last century, early this century, HR. In 2016, I decided that I had enough of the wounds to heal and stepped back into academia and thinking about how I can apply that experience back into writing, educating, and preparing the next generation HR leaders.
I think that's great. And it probably really gives you a really interesting perspective to have done that, because you've been inside, you know what it's like to be in a corporation or have to deliver a talent program or help drive a business initiative or do a divestiture, as you said, right? And you went through some tough times at AIG, no doubt. So that's really helped you, I'm sure, as an academic. You've written multiple books. We're going to really cover one book today, I think, in detail, because I think it's so relevant and it's your latest book, which is The Digital Coaching Revolution. And I'm interested to know more about what made you decide to write this book, because pretty smart of you to be able to write this book a few years ago. You know, the books don't come out in like a month, so you've been thinking about this for a while, but I feel like it's really starting to happen. Tell us more about the book and what you hope people take away from it.
Yeah. You know what's really important to me? I always start by doing. I kind of prioritize, again, having stepped out of academia, coming back again. What I started doing, I started developing curriculum for NYU, thinking about the next generation HR, and pretty early on realizing that it's the next workplace is going to be all about technology. However, the dangers of focusing exclusively on the tech side without including and thinking deeply about the human side of organization was a really dangerous path to take with a lot of implications. So what I started doing is developing curriculum at NYU that was balanced between HR and technology. In fact, we were one of the first, if not the first, master's degree in science in human capital analytics and technology. At the same time, I developed the first in the US program and master in science and executive coaching organization consulting. So I kind of was driving those two tracks. And what we started doing at NYU is convening the innovators in the HR technology, HR coaching technology space together for summits. For the last 4 years, we've been inviting companies that were investing in digital coaching to our campus and having these summits and kind of a crossroads between practitioners coming in from companies looking for new solutions for learning and development, as well as innovators and technologists who were coming up with these really cool ideas and, again, platforms initially. And what's really interesting, most of them did not come from HR backgrounds. They were coming from product development and marketing and all kinds of different walks of life. So we felt that what was missing is the meeting space, the public square where neutral that university can provide, where those conversations can happen. So as we were running those four consecutive summits, that's how the idea of the book came about. And I told my colleague, Woody Woodward, who is teaching in the coaching program for us, we need to write it down because this is something, this is a trend, this is more than just a post-pandemic reaction to people being sitting in their basements. Let's look at this as a phenomenon, as the future of learning and development. Invest in it, invest in the conference, invest in putting this down and creating a document, a book that will spark the conversation, but definitely will be outdated 2 months after it comes out, that we were fully aware of this. So that's how it came about.
It's a great story. I love how you're bringing this business perspective, the innovators, the entrepreneurs with the HR practitioner's perspective. And I think you're right. When I have met a lot of software founders, they were looking for a problem to solve. I mean, they picked HR as a ripe area. They kind of then the product management, they saw some different things that weren't done right, and they build, which is a great way to build and to build something that makes sense. But obviously that practitioner view is super helpful. I want to talk a little bit about the book just to get people understanding, because there's a lot of good stuff in there. I mean, it's not just about digital coaching. You really do go over coaching overall. So I think for people who are still trying to understand what is the coaching industry look like and how it's really shifting, I think it's a great book. But you talk about these key pillars of modern coaching. Can you walk through some of the pillars just to give us an understanding of that current landscape and how you think about it?
The most fundamental principle of coaching and the power of coaching that developed through ages from the Greeks. Socrates was sitting under the tree and teaching the students. It was all in dialogues and conversations. Is personalization. So the number one priority is personalization. So this is where coaching was used in companies primarily for the top executives. And initially, as you recall from your own experience, it was really to fix the behaviors of senior executives who might be brain makers bringing in lots of business. However, they failed on management, on their interpersonal skills. In HR, were called in to bring a coach to coach this particular senior executive, et cetera, et cetera. This is how, in companies, these interventions were initially introduced. Again, very expensive. Individual coaches were brought in on retainers for about 6 months or so. It was only available for the most senior executives. However, the methodology of coaching is very powerful because it personalizes the approach. It works on behaviors. It really connects the tutor and the executive who is undergoing this. And so the idea of making this available to much greater numbers of people was very appealing. Imagine the world, and we're stepping into that world right now, where this type of personalized approach to development will be available to all. That's the second pillar of modern coaching, will be from personalization, which is absolutely powerful, to democratization. So how do we take coaches, these types of coaching, to all? Clearly, it's not available if you're only relying on human coaches, because there's a capacity issue, there is some certification issue, credentialing issue, which is in the coaching profession is still kind of an emerging field. How do we certify coaches? We know what therapists have to do to get certified to be considered therapists, and there is a shortage of those. For the coaches, it's only early stages, and even the last maybe 20 years at most, that we have International Coaching Federation in the U.S. that developed the standards and certifications. And now most companies require human coaches to get those credentials to be able to work at the corporate level. So democratization is the goal and ambition for a lot of L&D professionals, PHROs, who want to create that level of acceleration of learning in their organization. And then access, that's the third pillar that I consider really important. Access means 24/7. The limitations of human coaches is that you have to set up an appointment, schedules are very busy. And between a busy executive or a busy employee and a coach availability, there's very little room for maneuvering, right? It's very rigid, infrequent meetings, et cetera. Imagine a coach that's available to you 24/7 when you need them in the flow of work, as the problems arise, et cetera, et cetera. You can get immediate response and reaction, et cetera. And the fourth pillar, this new way of approaching coaching, and I would argue learning and development in general, is scale. Scaling these types of solutions, not only to all levels of organization, but across global enterprise, where you could have people working in the front lines of, for example, Delta Airlines just adopted these tools for all of their frontline people. Imagine the number of airports that are being serviced by these associates of the Delta Airlines, that they're getting support in the coaching, very basic, even coaching level, wherever they are. In the field, guiding the planes to their gates in all different situations. So personalization, democratization, access, and scale is what's becoming available through the development of these new technologies. AI coaching is coming in fast and furious.
Yeah. And so I think that's really helpful. And I think what you're talking about here is really a digital coach, an AI coach, a chatbot, whether it's helping somebody answer a question, maybe this Delta, and I'm not as familiar with it, but it sounds interesting. Answering a question that they would ask the supervisor, or now people getting like digital coaches that are helping them think about a difficult conversation with an employee, right? Yeah. Using that way. I'd love it. And if you can tell us some more examples of how you're seeing the four principles of modern coaching being put in place by some really innovative companies.
Yes, I kind of described the general landscape of how it's used, but thinking about specifically HR applications, and you yourself just mentioned performance management process. I've done a lot of work on performance management, published my HBR article about the changes in performance management, and we knew the limitations of that current process where you used to have just one appraisal period a year, where employees would meet with their manager to be graded or rated, and oftentimes within 9 boxes that in some organizations still exist, to sort of pigeonholed in one place. And that would drive the entire positioning of that particular employee's, their compensation levels, their promotions, whether they're considered high potentials and sent to a prestigious training program, et cetera, et cetera. So it all depended on that one moment that matter in the appraisal process. And there's always been a lot of pressure on the managers to kind of serve this dual role. You'll have to appraise, you have to set goals, you have to do all of those kind of work-related work tasks, at the same time, become a coach to your employees, which was an impossible job, I would argue, for any manager. I know that you had the conversation with Prasad from Google, Project Oxygen, et cetera, where I identify how important that role is of the manager in the performance process. However, imagine that we could actually relieve the manager, at least on a day-to-day basis, from the obligation of providing feedback or sole responsibility for the feedback to the employee. And the employee can actually, with those types of coaching solutions that are becoming available to us, be guided through the performance management process all the way from the beginning, from goal setting, from aligning your goals with the goals of their organizations, making sure that it's strategically connected with what the organization, what your team is working on, what your manager prioritizes, et cetera, et cetera. All of it is pretty formulaic, let's face it. And check-ins and getting feedback on your productivity, et cetera, et cetera. So that when your moments that matter with the manager come about, and most companies introduce more frequent touch points, let's say 4 times a year, and they name the check-in, but you show up to your manager with a lot of data from your coach, a lot of data that's collected across the team that is not only about what you do, but how you collaborate, what your customer response is, et cetera, that you can bring into that conversation. And imagine that human conversation that occurs that is much more data informed, much more substantive, where the manager can actually focus on the things that the bots can do, right? Seeing that happening already in some companies as the best practices, that outsourcing sort of the day-to-day feedback process, as well as some basic coaching that occurs, questions that might be asked, as well as the preparing for your conversation with the manager. I have these issues to discuss. What could be the response? Role-playing, the same thing for managers. If they know they have a difficult conversation to have, what did we do before? We would send them to training. Remember how much training has been done on having difficult conversations with your employees. Now you could role play, personalize, prepare yourself with the data at hand on how to approach this particular conversation, even from the manager perspective. So it's a win-win-win in the process that's so fundamental to the running of any business and managing of every employee.
When you talk about this, a couple of things come to mind. One, and I was just reading something recently about contradictory point of view of what you're thinking, right? And that, are we outsourcing what's the critical role of a manager to AI to do and give this feedback? You know, I understand that argument. It makes sense. Look, isn't it what a manager's job is to give good feedback, give good direction? But I was thinking about, and I'd love your perspective, the reason why we need to maybe give AI a try here and start to use AI coaching is that managers have failed for a long time to give good feedback, to help out at the right time and the right moment. And managers should probably have more on their plate than they've ever had before because they're player coaches. So I think this goes back to Prasad, and I think the quote he had around one person's automations, another person's augmentation. It's really coming down to, how do we start to bring these things to life in a fully consistent and cohesive manner for an organization? That's what really talent leaders and HR leaders are going to have to think about. How do you do this in a way that it makes sense and it feels natural, so the moments that matter really do matter? And then how do you get people motivated on their own to use the AI tools as a thought partner, as a coach, et cetera? How do you think about those things coming together?
I'm sure that that pushback comes from the coaches themselves, not from the managers, because managers understand really well how much help they need, especially when it comes to managing teams and big teams, as what we can see, the flattening of the organizations and how many people are now reporting into that one manager. So let me help with some of that positioning. You know, we really are talking about augmentation. We're not talking about replacing managers with AI at this point in time. And augmentation takes care of things that have not been done before. It's filling in the gaps. As you know, as we started this conversation, how often can a manager actually have that moment when they observe the real in real time what employees do and provide that feedback, especially in a remote situation? It's absolutely an impossible task. And that's where having a stand-in for the manager with still getting the feedback so that you continue to improve and learn and take on new skills and new tasks, et cetera, and be more efficient and productive. All of that is available. Where you will need a human connection will be more empathetic, more kind of mentorship type of support. The manager comes in when all of that day-to-day interactions have taken place. Again, the data are collected and the conversation can happen much more data-based than purely emotional or depending on your standing or your status in your organization. The other thing I want to say that we often forget, we kind of assume that employees will go for advice and everything that they need to learn to the manager. A lot of times, because of the status difference and psychological safety that we all celebrate when it happens. But imagine a situation where you have to expose the fact that you don't have a skill. You need to, something occurred that you might be not very comfortable sharing with your live manager because you know how much of manager impression of how you work will affect your standing in your organization all the way to your employment status, your promotion again, compensation, everything. So most people do not necessarily feel very comfortable to be confiding with their managers. It's a unique situation that may occur. We talk about the quality of management, right? How much research has been done. And most companies will tell you that middle management, for better or worse, just because of the Peter principle, we promote people to these management positions. There are lots of design issues that affect the quality of that management relationship. So in those types of situations, and we already have the data that shows that AI is actually trusted much more by employees on this kind of day-to-day transactional and even skills development basis where could be asked, what can I do better? Where do I find help on this particular issue? And that could be immediately resolved. And your manager doesn't need to know that you are upskilling yourself as things develop. From the manager perspective, the manager can have a much better view of what the entire team is doing, kind of having the heat maps of the types of trends and questions that are surfaced through the coaching conversations where the companies and those data are not available to the companies, but you can request your digital coaching vendor provide some of the data that would show what kind of concerns people have. In fact, I would say like recurring coaching themes, right? And I would say that in my view, as we are going to have these tools, co-pilots, assistants, more and more present in organizations, we're going to replace surveys because we know how inefficient surveys are. Employee engagement survey, we ask the same set of questions and people have to respond, whereas coaching conversations occur throughout the day. And as you can see, consistency of themes that are brought up by employees without identifying anyone in particular, you can have a pretty good sense of where your organization is.
On that last point, are you thinking that basically us, someone using the AI or coaching tools, will do a sentiment analysis or pull that data out and kind of give a reading of how, where everyone's at? Or do we start to move to where people are reading emails and doing sentiment analysis, which I think that everyone feels like it's breaking privacy because we had that capability today and no one's really doing that, but more on the coaching side, you think?
Yeah, no, I think it's just the recurring themes. If you see, instead of doing polling that we know is very ineffective or surveys, or you have disgruntled people answering surveys and people who are happy and not answering those questions, so you're not going to have an accurate picture of what's going on in your organization. So in my view, we need to really, and that's an emerging field, we really need to understand how to use those data it really was a view of the privacy and security of those data inside the firewalls, and all of those preventive measures are in place when you're working with a digital coaching provider. They have all of the security in place so that you could really isolate out the data for your organization.
It's really interesting. Talk about where in the book you said something like a coach with a bot will win over a coach without a bot, which I thought was interesting. How do coaches work side by side with a digital coach in your mind?
Yeah, I think it will allow human coaches, and now we're talking about human coaches and digital coaches, right? Human coaches are really going to be empowered to focus on the best of their work. As we know, in a coaching engagement, there's a lot of mundane transactional work that needs to happen, taking notes of the conversation, creating summaries, providing feedback to the person you're coaching, even scheduling engagements, et cetera, et cetera. All of that could be done through co-pilots and assistants and the agents coming in. So my agent will be talking to your agent as we're setting up this coaching engagement. Instead of having to take notes while you are speaking, I will be all engaged in hearing, listening to what you're saying, where the bot is going to be taking notes and then summarizing those immediately after that, sending you the summary and sending me the summary, as well as reminding me next time I have an appointment with you of what has been discussed, what kind of actions have been committed to. So that kind of work that could be done very efficiently, much more accurately than if I were to try to listen and multitask and take notes, liberates both the coach and the client to have a fully engaged, empathetic conversation and focus on the human connection, knowing that documentation data will be in place for us to pick it up at the next engagement.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of efficiency there. I totally agree. That would be great. I still haven't totally gotten used to joining a Zoom call and they've got their AI assistant. I got on a call just a few days ago with somebody and I joined and then the AI assistant joined and then they joined maybe 4 or 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
Of course, they weren't talking. It was just recording, basically. But it was a little strange that it joined before that person joined, which I did not know they were doing that, because I've still not fully gone all the way to having every Zoom call recorded. But I do think we're getting going there. But I think the efficiency of the note-taking is really powerful, and I can see why coaches would want that. But Anna, as we think about this digital coach, if you use ChatGPT or Claude or whatever your large LLM provider of choice is, the way you ask the questions, you can get a coach today. So we have it really available today, but you have said to me, JP, in a few years, everyone's going to have a digital coach. But for organizations that want coaches, is it going to be them buying this from a AI company that does digital coaching and then basically deploys it? Or is it building this internally? What do you see that transition?
It's a really, really good question. And in fact, we were just discussing it also at our summit. At this point in time, it's almost like if you have Microsoft Suite, PowerPoint and Word document, et cetera, Microsoft Word, are you going to be developing it in your own company or are you going to bring that in? So my recommendation at this point is to really go to the top coaching providers. I would say like the leading AI coaching provider is Valence right now. They're exclusive AI and they have a lot of experience of that because, you know, they're really focused on following a very specific ICF approved coaching methodology. They have a team of very capable engineers. They know all the ins and outs of privacy. They're working with top Fortune 500 companies. So they have a lot of experience of how to introduce these types of tools into the organization. Again, working at scale with massive employee populations. So they have a lot of experience. So my recommendation is to definitely go with an outside vendor. Companies like Microsoft, for example, I can see the evolution of co-pilots to a certain extent. These types of agents, especially from the efficiency perspective, are going to be built into the tools. And a lot of agents are going to start showing up in all types of tools that we use. And scheduling, I'm sure the big HRS systems like SAP and Workday are going to be bringing in those coaching capabilities, but those are specific to the tools. They're much more transactional in a sense. For the learning and development purposes, I still think that there will be this group of elite top companies. And again, I can name a few without having any specific commitments to any of them. But for AI, will be definitely Valence. BetterUp is the company that got the whole trend started early on in 2013. There's Coach Hub, a European company. Ezra is also very, very well-established coaching provider. But there's a handful, about five. ASAP. And my recommendation to any HR leader or L&D leader is to review all of them, have a conversation, have a demo, try it out. Most companies start with a pilot and they go to a specific group in the company. Usually middle management is often the case. They start with a group of volunteer middle managers who want to get that type of support, as well as then rolling out on a greater scale, like what happened to Delta Airlines, as I understand it. They first introduced these coaches. Remember, there was the software update CrowdStrike glitch when a lot of airlines were just knocked out of the systems and there was a lot of panic, a lot of customer complaint, et cetera, et cetera. And that's when they started thinking about how do we get help to our employees on the ground in that moment of stress. That's how they started, with a little pilot. And it worked so well that they now are bringing in those tools for the entirety of their Delta employee population, which is very impressive. So we're seeing already the adoption, best practices coming in, but most companies are treading carefully. They're doing reviews, they're piloting, and they're seeing how their specific organization, specific culture. And by the way, the one thing I want to mention here is that there's a lot of customization that happens. The AI coaches are trained on the company values, on the new leadership. Like one of the companies is rolling out new leadership values, et cetera, et cetera. All because it's AI, a lot of proprietary information, again, with all of the firewalls established, is fed into these coaches. So they speak in the language of that particular culture. It's not like the HRS systems, remember, when we bring in and we just have to be trained on those tools. This system is trained on the culture of the organization.
Yeah, the context is really important for leadership development around what that company is all about. So maybe the core, maybe I'm guessing the core of the model is the same, but adding that piece in is really important at the end. And two last questions for you. As you think about this future of work in a workplace that's really going to be pretty unpredictable, really hard to know what that looks like, how should next gen HR leaders think about preparing and developing themselves for the future?
Staying open and getting as much help. The one thing about this particular digital coaching system, this is a topic for us. It's the fastest way to learn. I think where the focus needs to be is not only in how fast these technologies are being implemented by companies, but also how can we accelerate the learning of our people? How do we help humans to stay apace with the change of technology and all of the upskilling, reskilling that we're talking about? If we continue to do it the old-fashioned way, i.e. sending people to class, we're never going to keep up with this. What needs to happen is the learning needs to happen in a flow of work, with enough feedback, with enough support and training as those needs arise. So it needs to be distributed because, again, a lot of learning and development teams are very centralized and it's not how it's going to work. We are really at the time of decentralization. This is where we, again, to repeat what I said before, you have to personalize training because how you learn is different from how I learn. The AI coach can adjust to our learning preference, right? That's one. You have to start that learning process from the onboarding phase of the employee life cycle. not to wait until it's too late and we need to fix somebody's behavior at the top of the pyramid at the end of their career when it's too little, too late, right? If you help people when they're most eager, they're just beginning their career, I'm bringing it in for our students in our career services at NYU. Democratization, access, 24/7. I'm working on this issue now, tonight. I can't wait for a week until my coach is available, right? Or my training class occurs. And then personalization happens with the languages. These models speak. There are like 80 languages right now available. It's conversational. You don't really need to type. They're speaking back to you. And there's a lot of empathy. My favorite and my area of research right now is emotional AI. And these are the tools that are now learning to be empathetic and respond in empathetic ways. So it could be really well adjusted to what you need. But the point being is with all of the reskilling that everyone is talking about, let's help people get there at their fastest. And it only will be available if we personalize and deliver it to the people at the time of need, that learning that is so essential to us.
Really interesting, really forward-looking perspective. Thank you for that piece, Anna. Last question for you that I ask all my guests is, what is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, I know. It's one word is hard. And I was thinking about it, and I think it's adaptable. We have to be adaptable. We spend more time resisting these technologies, absolutely, at necessary critical thinking, et cetera, asking questions. But let's not approach it with an intention to resist it. Let's approach it with an intention to learn, adapt, incorporate in what we're doing, and learn. And I loved Prasad's curiosity, right? Let's approach it with a curiosity and imagination, but adaptable is what we need to be.
I couldn't agree more. Anna, thank you for being on the podcast. Thank you for helping us understand the digital coaching revolution is coming, so we better adapt. It was a great conversation.
Thank you so much. I loved it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR podcast. Thanks again to Anna for sharing why the digital coaching revolution is here and what we can do to embrace it. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, I think you'll enjoy my Future of HR newsletter, which is the only newsletter that's focused on helping you to elevate your career and business impact. Every Thursday, I'll drop in your inbox with one big idea that'll get you thinking, two questions to challenge your perspective, and three actions you can take to level up your HR leadership game. Think of it as your weekly HR leadership booster shot, quick, powerful, and designed to help you put the ideas into practice immediately. Go to futureofhr.com to subscribe and be sure to download my HR Leaders Blueprint, which is 18 pages of real-world advice from over 100 HR thought leaders with simple, actionable, and proven strategies to advance your career. And we'll be back next week with another amazing guest. Thanks again for listening to Future of HR and being part of our community.